This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico listener supported community radio for the Sacramento River Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century on every Tuesday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted tonight by myself, Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to the practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight, we are going to be continuing on our segment about love and creativity. And we were joined last week by Kat Chapman, who was previously a host on Love in the 21st Century and is now working on an endeavor in Santa Barbara called American Gal, and is expressing her creative genius in her own unique way. And we discussed sort of the evolving relationship that creativity has, that many people that are consider themselves to be creative find this inspiration that kind of channels through them. We also talked about some of the obstacles and opportunities that come with working creatively with other people, as well as with our own self-doubts when it comes to creativity. So tonight we're going to be talking with a good friend of mine about a different type of creativity and his expressing of his own unique version of creativity. So Ilya Brkanovic is going to be joining us tonight on talking about his works. So stay tuned for that, and we'll see what we get to. We have some more in store for you tonight if we get through this wonderful hour together. And again, this is a call-in radio show, so feel free to call in, ask questions, and share your own personal insights about creativity. The number here is 895-1114. So stay tuned to talk to Ilya Baranikov.
Very last time.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rolla's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rolla's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rolla's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. until 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468. All right, folks, welcome back to Love in the 21st Century, where we are talking about love and creativity with Ilya Baranikov. Hey, Ilya, are you there?
I am. I'm here.
Awesome. You're here, but not here. You're there. Thanks for...
There, not here, somewhere.
Somewhere in the ethers. Undisclosed
location.
Undisclosed. Yeah, somewhere on the planet. Thank you, Ilya, for joining us to talk in the conversation about love and creativity and to kind of give you a brief idea of the concept that we've been talking about. We just started the segment last week talking about love and creativity, and we talked about the creative process and how, from the perspective of myself and my co-host last week, which was Kat Chapman, talking about how love has a lot to do with what is eventually created by any individual, as well as sort of this divine, if you will, or this other sort of energy to create something comes within you, that it has to come without, that it's so pressing that you have to create something with it, and that creativity can be done in so many vast ways, that really creativity is a way in which one looks at the world and they exist. We also talked about other dynamics in talking about how to become creative or how to share creativity with others. But I'm hoping that tonight in our conversation, we can talk a bit about your particular view on creativity first, and then we can get a little bit more into your expression of that.
Awesome. I like the synopsis of what you guys were talking about last week. While you were saying that, I was being a little cynical in my own mind, and you said, you were mentioning that the creative process and having love in it, needing to express that. I feel like sometimes when I'm trying to be creative and there's a love interest in my life, it's almost the opposite, and then I can't almost create, or it's almost a hindrance to my creative process. I feel like with a lot of relationships or with a lot of love interests that I've had, that seems like, well, let me start it this way. The creative process in general for me is a lot to do with bringing some of my feelings outward and hopefully getting acceptance from an audience or from a group of people that I want to impress some ideas upon. I feel like a lot of times when I'm with somebody, the drive for acceptance or love from others is a little bit kind of inundated with acceptance from a person already. So a lot of times, for me at least, it's sometimes having a love interest going on or a relationship is almost a hindrance to the creative process. I don't know if anyone's mentioned that before.
No. Will you reiterate that so that I hear that a little more clearly?
Okay. Well, so being creative or the creative process for me a lot of the times comes about in times of loneliness or feeling like a need to express myself to others and feeling the wanting of this audience to accept me and my artwork and show appreciation for it. And when I'm in a relationship or I'm seeking love from a specific somebody or whatever, I feel like a lot of times it's almost a hindrance to the creative process.
Interesting.
Because the creative process, for me at least, has a lot to do with expressing myself outwards to a to an audience for some sort of validation or acceptance or transmission of ideas. And when I'm with someone, I feel like that process is already happening. And there's no need to make art sometimes, which is dangerous, in my circumstance at least.
Why would you consider it to be dangerous?
Well, because, you know, once you have what you want already, the game is over. And I don't know if it's just me being cynical or whatever, but, if there's a bunch of projects on my plate and I need to make some headroom or headway on them, and I have a relationship in my life that needs attention, then one of the two is going to suffer, right? I only have so much time in the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Figure out how to fit all those things into one's life, I guess, is a good concept to consider. The balancing act of creative self-expression while living life. Because, I mean, in a lot of ways, that self-acceptance that you're talking about does come in other forms, in relationship, in partnership, or in family connections, or in anything that really you have a presence in your life. I mean, there's some those acceptance, that acceptance comes through. But maybe your cynicism is a part of your creative magic, Ilya.
Mm. Well, thanks for calling it magic. A lot of people call it other things. But
right. And, you know,
appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure. I definitely do think what you do is there is a magical essence to it, and definitely when you put your mind to focusing on whatever you are creating. And before we get into that that section of talking about what it is that you what you do and what you've created and how you're inspired, just wanting to fuel the idea that we often put ourselves within the limitation that we have to do something in a certain confine. Like people say, I work better under pressure. Procrastinators tend to say that. I work better under pressure, which is, I mean, it's true in the sense that it has to get done. And if you want it to get done, then you are going to work well under pressure. But if you can actually train yourself to work in other segments, in other ways. And so in the idea of kind of expanding the conversation in terms of working and creating and being emotionally expressive through your art while in a relationship, maybe it is possible. It's just finding that balance in which there is a right relationship that allows you the space in which to express yourself in that way, especially when you're gifted in such a way.
Mm. Yeah, I totally can acknowledge the idea of that being possibly right.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, I hope it is.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, for your sake, I hope so. Because you're a super talented artist, and I would hate to think that it would be one or the other.
No, it's not one or the other necessarily. It's not that black and white. It's kind of just the idea that if one is happening, the other is suffering. to some respect.
Right.
I can put up boundaries in both regards and say, okay, I'm only going to do, you know, I'm only going to focus on my art maybe for 6 hours a day, and I'm going to focus on relationships this much time and this much time. But honestly, that's not how I work. That's never how I've worked. And the reason I chose to be creative or chose the artistic path in my life is because I don't like confinement. I don't like strict obligations. I don't like deadlines. I don't like all these things that that, I don't know, school reminded me of, and wasn't a huge fan of that, and didn't feel like that's the purpose of a human life, to live on Earth and be under restriction, and so that's my take on it. I know a lot of artists that work the complete opposite way. I know people, you know, for instance, who went to art school and who studied and who had projects done, and honestly, they're much more successful than I am, probably, definitely, because they did adhere to some sort of guidelines and how they express themselves and how they work. I just don't feel like taking on those types of responsibilities in that type of way is right for me necessarily.
Right.
And it kind of deflates the whole love of what I'm doing if I'm feeling like it's pressuring me somehow.
Right. Understood. So let's talk about the love of what you do. What is it that you do, Ilya?
Well, I'm a balloon artist for usually children's birthday parties. My medium usually is those long, stretchy balloons or regular. No, just kidding. No, I'm not a balloon artist. I do art installations and stages for music festivals usually. And then I do smaller artworks and pieces in between. And I build furniture and those types of things. But usually my work is interactive art installations and or stages for music festivals. That's the majority of my work that I do.
Awesome. And so I know that you have a website that has some of your pieces and some of your pictures of the stages you've developed. What's that website called?
It's souloceans.com.
Souloceans.com. And that would take you to a website that shows some of the stages that you've done in the past?
Yeah, correct.
So how has your relationship to your art and your creative process evolved? Like, where did it start for you?
Let's see. Well, if I'm going to be honest, and you'd probably like me to be honest.
I like it.
I left school when I was young because it didn't kind of suit my philosophy on life. And I experimented with I've been into music and art since I was I don't know how old, very young. And my mother didn't know what she didn't understand because my mother and father are both the structural engineers from the Soviet Union, and so they're very right-brained, or however I guess that's the one that does the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what was up with me, and da 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 da. And so I basically got into music and art at a younger age, and then discovered psychedelic experiences, which I think brought me to more of a it brought art and music to more of an important front in my life. Let's just say it like that. It opened some sort of perceptions in myself that allowed me to see things a little bit differently than most of the world did, at least. Probably not most of Chico, California, but so that's where I started, I guess. That's where a lot of inspiration came from, is these experiences I've had as I go through life, starting when I was quite young, 16 or something.
Mm-hmm. And so your skill has evolved over time, and so was there a particular medium that you started with your expression, or how does that story go?
Yeah, so I had to basically support myself since I was younger, because I left the house at around 16, left school, and so found out that the best way of making money, if you don't have a college education and you don't want to rob a bank, is to work in construction usually. And so at age 16, I started working in construction, getting familiar with tools and techniques and how to build houses and other things. And so that's kind of where I stood as far as art. I like to do big art. I'm very restless, so I really find it hard to sit behind a desk or to sit in a chair for more than like half an hour, you know? So I use these skills in combination with my love of art and expression, my love of music, my love of traveling and meeting new people, and kind of try to blend it in with this lifestyle that I'm now kind of living, which is a little bit of transient migratory festival chasing existence that I'm in right now, which is, you know, which I love / hate at the same time, which probably most people can understand why. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they could, but would you like to elaborate on why you feel that way about your work?
Well, so for every reason that I have a problem with a sedentary lifestyle, there's also obviously the positive aspects of the other one and vice versa. So the just traveling around constantly gets very tiring. Having to meet new friends and be in new social situations with people that I don't know. And you kind of want to settle down once in a while, and then you do that and realize that you can't, and that you have to jump on back onto the circuit again. So yeah, it's a little bit, there's moments of, God, why am I doing this? And then there's moments of, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it's much more extreme. If I say, like, settle down somewhere, those emotions would de-escalate, for sure. I would say, you know, I wouldn't have those thoughts very much. It's like the colors dull a little bit in the vibrancy of my life. But sometimes it's not what you want. You don't want you want to experience life in its fullest, you know, but then realizing what that does to you emotionally and physically sometimes makes you feel the need to kind of step back and take a more subtle approach to life, I guess.
Well said. So you mentioned that some of the work that you do is building interactive stages at festivals, and so I was hoping that you might be able to share some of the places in the world that you've been able to create works of art, and then also explain a bit about what you mean by interactive.
Okay, cool. So I started out working my first gig, unfortunately, because I'm so anti-banking and anti-economic establishment in this country, my first gig was due to nepotism, since it was my girlfriend at the time who was producing an event in Guatemala called Cosmic Convergence. And so I'm reluctant to say that I got my foot in the door through, you know, family or relationships, but it's true. So I can't knock Wall Street too much anyway right now. So the first gig I did was in Guatemala, and then I did other work at Envision Festival. I've done work in all over California, Lightning in a Bottle, Symbiosis, smaller things, Rain Dance, and then I've done stuff in the past 2 years in Australia, and then setting my sights on going farther south in the Americas, possibly this coming winter, and then kind of looking at doing Europe maybe a little bit later. And my the best explanation I can give is, since being a kind of admirer of large art installations, there was a time where art, at least in the museum world or smaller scale installations, sculpture, etc., they were very static. And there was a point where a lot of artists really dove into making the pieces more dynamic, more interactive, more interesting, and gave them a breath of life almost. And so what I try to do is I try to bring that element of movement, of dynamics, of the feeling of being alive into the art that I do. So, for instance, I'll have some kinetic movement. I'll have motors. I'll have parts of the stage. You can move them and touch them with your hands, and I'll have installations where, for instance, this last one in Australia at Rainbow Serpent, it was an installation where you can sit around and there's like this 360-degree bench looking outwards on the festival grounds. And on the tops of the benches, the backrest of these benches, there were buttons. And the buttons were controlling a set from Ableton Live, which is a a digital audio workstation or a music program, essentially, that each button would trigger one element of a song. So you can walk around and you press a button and you hear a bass line. And then you walk over to the next button and it would start playing chords. And you go on to the next one and play the melody. And the next one, it'd play the drums. And the next one, it'd have some maybe ambient droning of Buddhists meditating, monks. So you can go around and basically trigger all these sounds. And there's groups of people. It was fun to watch because they would just kind of remix it, stop things, start things, and get really into it. And that's kind of the thing I like about the work I do, because the environment is so open. Usually at music festivals, it's not like... If I try to make something fun and immersive and bring it to a museum, I'm sure I'll get scoffed at and laughed out the door, because, you know, a lot of the museum settings are more formal and boring, if I can say that. Yeah,
wow, that sounds quite amazing to be able to witness people interacting with something that you created.
Yeah, it's probably what keeps me going, quite honestly, those moments. Because the money's never great, and the time away from close friends isn't great. The instability's not great, but those moments and, yeah, just kind of living a more freer lifestyle, I guess, or less responsibilities, mm-hmm. Mixed together is why I do this, I guess, yeah.
So with any particular piece, is there any underlying intention of what you're trying to draw out or to have people experience?
Yes, I would say so, for sure. It depends on the process of where I start in the creative process. Sometimes I'll start with a idea or a theme from the festival. Usually I don't like to do that, but I will. And sometimes it starts out with a basic idea or a feeling I want to portray. A lot of stages that I've done, for instance, the first one was a Mayan temple, the Temple Tikal in Guatemala, and I basically took a 3D model of it and scaled it down to, I believe it was a quarter or maybe a fifth of the size. And I rebuilt it completely out of wood and lycra. And the center steps was a waterfall made from a roofing laminate, tin roof. And there were two large sunbursts behind it that people can get up and spin with their hands from climbing up the back. I just basically, it's different every time, but I want people to kind of get sucked into the stage, sucked into the environment. A feeling of awe, or a lot of times I'll have people coming up to me like, oh, that's so inspiring. I'm so happy that I was able to witness this because I've wanted to do something and, you know, on those lines. And that's really great for me. But basically there's a lot of kind of spiritual depth, I think, mostly is what I want to portray, the connectiveness between people that we don't regularly see in everyday life, but is there. And that I'm very aware of is there from my experiences in my own life.
And you're referring to...
So I kind of wanted to share an experience of connectedness with people, I guess.
And is that the connection between the people that are interacting with the art themselves, like the multiple people that are interacting at the same time? Or do you mean the connection with something more like the ethereal experience and... you know, whatever individual may be interacting with your art?
Yeah, it depends definitely on the piece. I'd have to go through every single one and right. Tell you what, you know, specifically each one was doing, but or I had intentions of doing.
Right.
But for instance, the one that you could trigger music with, that one is a more playful. It was basically, there was a statue of a woman from about above her mid-breast up, and she had a headdress, a wooden headdress on, and it was a steel frame in which inside it was a bunch of chakra lanterns that were connected to the music. So when you touch the buttons, rather, they would trigger the light show in the lanterns, which were representing the chakras in her body. And so I guess it was kind of like a showing the interconnectedness of people's effect on a body, or the external effects on a body, and how your environment will, in essence, create the music, which is your experience. You know, there's a million ways I could say it, but yeah, just the connectedness between the people and feeling that, instead of just going to a festival and kind of feeling like alone or separate, because I feel like that a lot of times. I feel like sometimes when I go places, I don't have my friends with me, or I don't, you know, necessarily, I'm not feeling very extroverted. I'll feel kind of lonely, and I think bringing people into those situations where everyone's kind of interacting with each other more is a great movement in the festival culture, because I do, you know, out of all of the naysaying and jadedness that I do have, I do think festivals are extremely important for shaping the way in which we want to see the world go, because it's such an experimental canvas as far as social interaction. I feel like it's very important to kind of steer that in a certain direction that you feel the world could use that same change, you know?
Absolutely. So when you're conceptualizing these stages or these works of art, you'll also have to be considering the amount of labor and realistic composition of such large pieces. How do you integrate that, or how does that, you know, come into play? Like, do you just visualize it and create it, and then worry about like what materials you're actually going to use to build it afterwards? Or is it kind of like a, you know, double lane highway where you're kind of you're thinking of those things as you're working on your art?
Yeah, over the years I've kind of developed the style of my workflow and my creative process, where I'll start with a simple drawing. Now I'm using this program on the iPad called Paper, which is really great because you don't waste paper, and you don't have to carry around a bunch of colored pencils and watercolors and markers and Sharpies and pencils and drawing pad, because I've done that. And for a long time, you know, when you lose $70 worth of colored pencils, it kind of hurts. And so I got this program. So I basically just do a two-dimensional, and then I will run it through for reference in a 3D program I use called SketchUp. And then I'll build a miniature mock-up in which I will actually construct it out of popsicle sticks, skewers for shish kebabs, you know, those type straws, those type of things. And then you can really go in there and play with the geometry of what you're building to see if there's any weak areas in the structure that would have trouble in real life sustaining, you know, seven people climbing on it, or however, depends on what part of the world I'm working in. But in Australia, people like to climb things a lot, unfortunately. So a lot of thought is put into, well, if we do have seven drunk Aussies on top of this thing, is it going to stand up, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's my creative process so far. That's how it works at the moment. I'm sure it's going to change again, but that's how I like to work, yeah.
Awesome. If you're just tuning in, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listening to Love in the 21st Century. We are talking about love and creativity with Ilya Bronnikov. Kind of started
that's
on that.
Better than I usually say it.
Oh, thanks, Ilya. And we're talking about his creative process and what his project, which he calls Soul Oceans. And you can check out some of his work on souloceans.com and his more intimate, intricate pieces, to his furniture, to the massive stages that he builds really internationally, which is quite amazing and magical, that some may say. I would say. So Ilya, is there any insights that you would want to share with somebody that is, you know, maybe not, they consider themselves creative, or they are nervous about the idea of sharing their works with people, or going in the direction of which that which you've shared, which is sort of just to live by your own accord and to create at your will. Is there any insight that sort of keeps you going, or something that maybe was said to you when you were first starting out that you could share with our listeners?
Yeah, I could.
Will you?
Not necessarily something that's been said to me, but something I've learned along the way, is keep waking up in the morning and finding that motivation to work on something. And also, don't really give a crap about what people say about your work, because we're all different. We all have our own tastes in whatever we do, and eventually you'll figure it out, that style or that aesthetic that you want to go for. But definitely don't let anyone discourage you. There's many, many, many people out there that just put in the hard work, and after a while they can reap the benefits of it, whatever those are, whether it's, you know, spreading your work farther or financially or however. You know, if you just work hard at it and keep to it, it's just eventually it's going to happen. There's nothing more I can really say. I wouldn't advocate the lifestyle I live. I think some people would enjoy it. Some people hate it. Some people I know don't even understand why I would do something like that.
Right.
You know, like, don't. Isn't it, you know, doesn't it suck sleeping on people's couches all the time, or finding, you know, crappy hotels and, you know, rainstorms at festivals in the middle of nowhere with no cell phone reception, getting hurt in the middle of nowhere, getting spider bites, takes your, you know, flesh off, and, you know, there's a lot of things that are unsavory about this. But at the same time, I wouldn't be doing anything else. I've really thought about that as well.
So anybody that may be considering this conversation as something of inspiration, you're sort of giving a disclaimer that it's not all glory, that there's also some real world, real life challenges you have to be willing to navigate in order to enjoy the luxury of living out your creative process.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, Ilya, so much for joining us and sharing with us your creative process. And for anybody that's interested in seeing Ilya's works, again, that's souloceans.com. Ilya, keep it up. We'll talk with you again about some other things someday soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, awesome, Tammy. Thanks for having me.
Yes, cheers.
Cheers, everyone.
All right, Love in the 21st Century. We are going to have the Chudies coming up here soon. It's Ecotopia. They are on every Tuesday from 6 to 7. They discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. So stay tuned for that. We're going to listen now to some inspirational words from someone that I find to be very motivational. His name is Jason Silva, and I may have shared some of his work here on the show before, and is talking a bit about what the creative process is and what it looks like. And if you have any insights or comments you would like to make after we play this, feel free to give us a call. The number to get on the air is 895-1114.
There are people who talk about the creative process with such humility. You know, there's a sense that something larger than yourself has worked its way through you. You know, to paraphrase Khalil Gibran's notion about children, the creative process, creativity comes through you, but not from you. Though it is with you, it belongs not to you, right? You know, this notion that we are the frontal lobes of the universe. And so when we craft beauty, when we vocalize, when we utter inspiration, what are we actually doing? Are we creating something that isn't there? Or are we merely transcribing, right, The notion of inspiration means we're breathing in and exhaling what we've taken in. So we're merely transcribing the observation of what is. We're reporting. We are all cosmonauts, psychonauts, and the creative process is merely what we brought back as reporters of the numinous. When we go to Plato's realm of ideals, we are as navigators, we are as Dorothy going to Oz, seeing the world through a different lens, seeing reality through a different operating system, a different set of filters, and thus being able to read differently, to see something that others can't, and then bring that back, and then share that back. And I think that that's what's happening during creativity. I think that that's why we should be humble about it. Respect the gods. There's poetry in every moment.
Always well stated, always so poignant. Jason Silva sharing what is to be creative. And I have heard so many people share that perspective, that it's really something that is coming through them rather than something that they themselves have done. And though the skill and the talent and the hours of practice definitely have a part to play in many a creative person's ability to produce their level of artwork, it also is something that's necessary in order for that inspiration to channel through them. So just so well stated and so poignant, Jason Silva. And now I would like to share with you some more from Infinite Waters, who we shared last week, and he helps to inspire the skill or the personal development one might inquire to do if they were wanting to expand themselves as an individual. I find his work to be very deeply transcendental and very inspiring in order to grow as a person. And so this particular piece is called Eight Powerful Ways to Build Your Creative Confidence. So how to grow as your creative being. And so I hope you find him as engaging as I do. Again, his name is Infinite Waters.
Waters diving deep once again. We're here in nature, raising the frequency. Eight powerful ways to build your creative confidence. This is what's helped me along my journey, because there was a time where I wasn't producing this much, but one day I just woke up and I had superhuman powers from nowhere. What happened? I saw along my journey that it's all about our emotions. That is the secret to unleash our creative power. Once we see the emotions, the energy in motion molds our physical body. We must be aware of the energetic field around us influencing our emotions, the type of music we are listening to. Are we eating beautiful plant-based foods to raise our frequency? Do we feel guilt or shame? We must become aware of our emotions to heal our physical body and place ourselves in an environment which complements our own energy. Don't stop now. Don't stop now. Number one is to relax. This is what's helped me, because so many of us, we are running around all the time. We're in a hurry to get nowhere fast. Have you ever wondered why so many of us, we keep ourselves busy? There are so many distractions around, because that takes you out of your imagination, which is the image in action. So when you tap into your imagination, now you use the power of visualization and you manifest whatever world you desire. It's powerful. It's worked along my journey. And meditating helps. Being in nature does wonders. Being grounded
reconnecting back to the elements, all of this has helped me become more creative. On a scientific level, we have to look at the five brainwave frequencies. And the first one is delta. This is our sleeping state, our dreamless sleep state, between 1 to 3 hertz. Then you have theta, which is all about visualization, deep relaxation. Then you have alpha waves, which is that relaxed state, that calm state, that meditative state. Then you have beta. And beta brain waves is the frequency many of us are vibrating on. This is our awake state, our conscious state, where we are most anxious as well. And you also have gamma brain waves. And this is 40 hertz and above. And this is for high-level brain processing. This is where we develop our superhuman powers. And this is very rare. To have high bursts of gamma brain waves, only a few people experience that. Like you and me. What is so fascinating about this is that scientists have shown the people who display the highest levels of creativity, they have higher bursts of alpha waves because this puts them into that meditative state. Along my journey, I do this by listening to beautiful, calm music. I love tuning my guitar to 432 hertz frequency because I have seen the difference compared to 440 hertz. Binaural beats, powerful. And this is where people record two microphones to create that 3D stereo sound. So it feels like you're there in the actual room they were playing the music. But once we see that everything around us is based on frequency, we start to heal ourselves. We start to smile again. We start to be like Pharrell and be happy. What's helped me most of all in terms of relaxing is to remind myself that I am good enough. I don't have to compete with society. It's all about allowing yourself to be who you are. Letting go of society's expectations. Number two is all about exercising. I found that just by exercising daily, my creativity has increased. And I love doing yoga. And even scientists have shown how people doing yoga, their brain wave frequency changes from beta into alpha, which is that calm state. So that prepares us for anything we are going to experience during the day. Yoga is a metaphor for life. The twists, the turns. Life is going to do the same thing. So we better get ready. And whatever form of exercise you gravitate towards, embrace it. Because this increases your level of creativity. Once you change one area of your life, every other area of your life mirrors that. It can't help but do that. Number three is about embracing failure. So many of us, we are told that we always have to win. And when you are not concerned with winning, you can never lose. That's what's helped me along my journey, to see that I don't have to struggle to make it. I am already there. And even if I make a mistake, it is a stepping stone for me to reach my greatness. Because a lot of us, we are afraid to make mistakes. But if you are afraid all the time, you can never be creative. Being creative is about taking the risks. It's not about playing it safe. It's about moving out of your comfort zone and seeing that It's about transcending the duality of failure and success, stepping into that neutral state. And number four is all about having fun. When we are not concerned with perfection, yes, we can give our best, but at the same time, I've found that just let go. And also breathing deep helps me to do this. Breathing deep from the base of my spine also helps put my brain in that alpha state, that super creative state. And when we can just see that, once we become playful, we have a higher level of creativity because we are taking more chances. We are taking more risks. We are taking every opportunity that comes our way, and we are letting go of fear, which is false evidence appearing real. We are moving into the power of now. We are absorbing ourselves into the moment, and that is what meditation is. But to do that, we have to embrace our journey, enjoy the process instead of the outcome. Number five is all about value. Once you place value on your creation, it becomes alive. And a lot of us, we are going through life without any heart. We are just existing. We are not living to our true potential. And what I say along my journey is that go into the feeling. Whenever you are creating something, ask yourself, how does this feel? Because it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality of how it makes you feel. And if you can smile to yourself, you're on the right track. I love creating work to share with the world, but ultimately, I make it as a diary for myself. In becoming the greatest versions of ourselves, it's all about loving yourself 100%, trusting yourself 100%. All of this leads to a higher creativity level, because everyone is going to have an opinion of what we are doing. Not worrying what other people think is the highest form of self-love. But before that takes bravery. And to be creative, we have to be brave. Number six is passion. Some people, they have all the talent in the world, but the universe is not concerned with talent. The universe is concerned with your passion, because passion is the catalyst for manifesting your desires. Passion helps us build up that momentum. Don't do it because you have to. Do it because you love to. I tell myself this every single day, and it works. Not all of us are here for the same reason. Everyone has a different job to do on planet Earth. But we have to ask ourselves, are we in love with what we are doing? Who are we doing it for? That's the question. Because the more we can begin living from the inside out, which is being gently pulled in the direction of our heart, now we begin to manifest our desires. It is amazing when you have passion, when you can wake up early. Sometimes you go to bed so late as well. That's what passion does. Passion is a lifestyle. That's why what I do is not work. It is a lifestyle. And I love it. Number seven, to build that creative confidence, to be a producer instead of just a consumer, is about healthy eating. It's transformed my life to embrace a more plant-based diet. Eating your greens. Also, drinking enough water to keep us hydrated. All of this helps us to become the greatest versions of ourselves because it gives us the energy we need to prepare us for anything life throws at us. And that's it right there. Number 8 is all about being spontaneous. Being spontaneous is all about plunging yourself into the moment. Just jump in. Do it. Because what have you got to lose? Like Buddha said, the problem is you think you have time. Life is short. Yes, we are immortal. But once we have the energy right here, right now, we must not delay in fulfilling the dream. And all of that takes radical action. Because to be creative, we must stop thinking and we must start acting. We must essentially move our whole body, our whole being, the whole core of our existence into the radical action, which is the power of now. Once again, a lot of us, we are stuck in our headspace. When, in essence, we have to move more into our heart. That is where we develop that intuition, which helps us tap into our creativity. We develop that focus. We develop that acceptance because we are our own hardest critic. Once you accept yourself 100%, then it's over. Because you stop relying on the validation from external sources and you say, I am good enough. And therefore, you start creating and aspire to create. Create to inspire. Because we have to see that we are all in this world together. So once we begin connecting with those who remind us who we are, they help us manifest our desire. They help us build our creativity. But being spontaneous is about not being so fussy about what you are creating. It's that laissez-faire approach to say, yeah, it's good enough. Because simplicity is the highest form of sophistication. And as I am going through this magnificent journey called life, I am getting rid of a lot of stuff, a lot of junk, whatever is no longer serving me. Because to be in your most creative state, your mental, emotional, and physical body have to be in divine equilibrium. You have to be in balance in your mind, because it is all a mindset. Change your thoughts and you change your world. Hello. So there you have it. Just remind yourself that we are living in an amazing time on planet Earth. A lot of people are waking up to the illusion and they are finding the true power that lies within. At the end of the day, the only thing that matters is who had the most fun. We are here in nature, raising the frequency, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Stay well, stay healthy. Peace.
Hey guys, Will Durst here with a few choice words on the two major party presidential candidates. And yes, there are differences. One is a Democrat and the other a demagogue. One is a woman who has big hands and the other isn't and doesn't. And as Michael Bloomberg put it, one of them is not insane. But this is America, damn it, where, yeah, sure, we acknowledge our differences. After all, each and every one of us is special and unique, like a baby snowflake. But this is a country that also celebrates what binds us together, and that Donald and the Hillary have an amazing amount of similarities. For instance, both are Americans who live in New York, are right-handed, and sport bulletproof hair. Both treat the truth with a disdain normally reserved for Zika-infested mosquitoes. Both of their spouses are beloved enablers of the tabloids. Each of them has the same connection to regular humans as a Learjet has in common with sourdough yeast. Both have unfavorable ratings higher than the guard geese downwind.